Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to season three of Step Into Your Sunshine. Now is your time to rise and truly step into your sunshine. This podcast is hosted by yours truly, Rachel Coudron, the owner of Etsy boutique Coudron's Curiosities, and the event coordinator for La Forêt de Lumière Holistic Experience that is going to be hosted in France in May of 2025. If you want more information about that, go to rachelcoudronevents.com. If you have any more questions, then just find me on Facebook under that name. Today, we have a beautiful lady, and I would love for her to introduce herself.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for having me today. So my name's Amanda. I'm Amanda Box from Outside the Box Coaching and Training. I absolutely love the title of your podcast, and it's just reminds me on my daughter's wall, I've got an actual picture that says, "You are my sunshine." So I feel there's a connection already there. So I'm a trainer and coach in NLP. And as we were talking, it's absolutely changed my life on how I felt, because there were so many times in my life that I felt that I couldn't go on, or I didn't want to talk to anybody. And a huge part of my job now is talking therapist. So I do a lot of talking now, but I support families from fertility and beyond. So a huge challenge of mine was around fertility. But I find with NLP, it's very much around the emotions that we hold on to. So the unconscious is very powerful, and it holds on to all those negative emotions. I mean, when we're born, we only have two fears: the fears of falling, and the fear of loud noises. Everything else we pick up from our environment, from our families, from the schooling that we go to, our friends, and everything then builds on that. So a lot of the fears and things that we hold on to, we've took through our lives, and it takes a while to find out what that root cause is and actually clear it. And by doing that with parents and families and doing sessions, we can actually find those root causes with emotion-free techniques that actually then clear that. So rather than managing emotion, we're actually clearing it. So it helps you then move forward. And I found for me, that was a huge thing to help me move forward and actually achieve the things that I wanted with my family.
My goodness. Oh, wow. Well, tell me more about what is NLP. For all of those that are listening that have no idea what that means, what is that?
So NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. So it works around how our language, our environment, so our emotions, how we feel, but also then we link it with our behavior. So basically, what we're taking in, our unconscious then transfers. So it may be in something that we see, or something that we feel, or something that we hear. We take all that emotion in, but what happens is we turn it into a very small amount from our experiences. So although we're hearing things and we're seeing things and we're taking it all in, we then convert it into from our experiences, so our internal representation, and a small of it is then processed, which we add to them from our own experiences that keep coming. And in turn, that turns into our behavior. So for example, if we have an experience, a good one is the fear of spiders. So it may be a tiny spider, and then all of a sudden, every spider that we see is frightening. So it may be that, we've looked over and we've seen a spider in the room and it's frightened us. But then from then on, we build on that. So every spider or every conversation somebody talks about a spider, it then adds to our fear. So if we don't clear that, what will happen is it automatically stays in our unconscious and we add to it, which so to ourselves, we make that fear stronger. And if we don't then actually find out what that root cause was and clear that, so we can do that, fears of phobias, spiders, needles, all sorts of things. If we clear those, it means that then when we actually have to go and do something that we need to have that, we can deal with it without feeling that anxiety and overwhelm from thinking, oh my God, in the past this happened, so this is going to happen again. And it clears those emotions. And like I say, it's emotion-free techniques. So it's not where, as in counseling, where we would talk exactly about that. It's more I talk to the unconscious to clear that. It can be done very quickly. So like for me, I had a huge fear of needles. And when I actually look back at it, and I did these processes when I was training, it turned out that actually a doctor had read the wrong chart years ago. So I must have been about six, and told my mum that I'd got a liver condition. And what happened then was months and months of blood tests until they realized their error. So in my head, although it put the fear into me, then it added. So every time I had to go for a blood test, it would be like, if they lose it or if anything goes wrong with it, what's going to happen? And I would be always conscious of that, but hadn't realized that once I'd got back to the root cause, that is cleared and you can then move forward. So that is not then adding to your anxieties or anything for the next time that you have to go and have an injection or a blood test or anything like that.
Wow, that sounds really, really interesting. The first time I heard of NLP was actually through Tony Robbins. For me, I'm a big fan of his, and when he talks about NLP and his early starts to with NLP and how he really got started, it was fascinating. And if you watched or if you've ever seen his previous videos when he was up and coming, then you can see like how quickly the NLP phobias and fears can be cleared. And it was astounding to me. That really opened my eyes to NLP. And for me, I think this is a really, really useful skill that most people should know, or be aware of, or have access to someone who is trained in NLP, because it can make such a big difference in your life. I mean, I can think of fears of my own, but I can also think of fears of my sisters, fears of my husband, my dad, my mom, and some of them, especially one member of my family, she has a severe fear of flying. And to the point, it like even thinking about going on a plane, she hasn't even bought a ticket. It's not even there yet. It's not happening. But just the thought of going on a plane like sends her into a panic. It like she starts to sweat just thinking about going into like her heart rate starts rising, beating faster, all of that stuff. And I remember when I was reading one of Tony Robbins' books, I was like, well, we can work on this. We can work on this, you know? And I remember her saying, and I'll never forget this, was like, well, Rachel, you just have to accept the fact that this is my fear and it's going to be this way and it can't be changed. And I was just like, I can't accept that. I just don't agree with that mentality. And for me, I think that's why more people need to hear about it, because I think, like you said, if you had a fear that started at the age of 6, and the time you're 36, you've lived 30 years with this fear, and in your mind, it's absolutely impossible for you to even think about a future where this fear doesn't drive your actions. And so I think this is going to be a really helpful episode for people, because to know that they could live with something for 30, 40, 50 years and it can be cleared in just a few minutes is absolutely astounding. Do you have any experiences that you could share with us as some of the experiences you've had over the years with other clients?
Yeah, absolutely. And a big thing we talked about there is, like your sister said, you're just going to have to deal with it. This is my fear. And that's when I always have a call with someone beforehand, because that if they say that, sometimes we're not at the point where we want it to change. We're okay to hold on that. And for my own personal experience, I had fertility problems. And so my little girl is now 10. But when I look at that, the trauma that I went through because of my fear of needles. Now, if we know things about fertility treatment and IVF, there is a lot of needles, there is a lot of blood tests. But what can happen is that panic can almost stop you getting the thing that you want, but it also can cause you a lot more of anxiety and things to actually get to that point, because I knew it was always going to be the thing that I wanted children. And I almost had to fight that fear for the first, say, 10 years of going through. I was fighting that fear to the extent, I mean, I can smile a little bit about it now, but my husband at the time, I'd be like, you need to be here on these mornings. And what I'll do is I won't set the alarm. You set the alarm and you sort out the medication and try and do it to me while I'm asleep, because then I won't have that fear. And he was like, oh, this is really, so then I was almost passing my fear on to him going, but you need to be able to do it this way, because then I won't know about it. And to think now from that, doing the phobia release, it released that. And I, not only my husband now has Crohn's, so I help him with the injections and can release that fear, but also I've just had recently a client who was 12 that came with his mum. And what I think is really important with this is he was really struggling to have some injections. And where we are here in the UK, it's very much at high school, the expectation is You go, you're registered. Obviously, when I was at school, my mum was very relieved in the fact that nobody had to, she just signed the form and sent it back, basically. There was no thing of having a child have their choice put across. It was that mum was like, it's very much a big relief for me, the fact that I didn't have to do that. But you have to go and stand in a queue. And my name was, well, my name's Amanda Box. So AB, I was always at the front of the queue. And I'd be like, oh my, and she wouldn't tell me and she'd close the door on me. But now to think that this child has then gone, we've cleared the emotion, and he's been able to go and have three injections done on the same day for the ones that he couldn't do through school because he just had got that fear. But also, other people were saying things in the background. And a big thing for us is as well, we take on that if we've already got a fear, and then someone goes, oh, that's really going to hurt, then we add that to our own fear. But also, with as parents, we don't realize what we project out. So what was really good with these sessions, I work with both children and parents, because one of the parents said to me, oh my God, I think some of this is me. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, all I'm thinking is, oh my God, he's not going to have it done. He's not going to have it done. And we're going to have to go through this and it's going to mess up his choices and he's not going to be able to do things. And it was like, well, hold on a minute. That's exactly then, without even saying it, we don't realize that we project out what we're thinking. So if you're thinking, I don't want this, I don't want this, I don't want this, what's going to happen unconsciously? We are going to talk ourselves out of things. But if our parents are doing the same thing, you almost have two lots of conflict. And then it grows because you're then going, well, hold on a minute. So working with the parents as well, it cleared up a lot of her fears and she focuses more about what she wants. And I think working together as well with NLP, we all have an internal representational system. So it can be in the language we use, which I think is fantastic at schools, which would really help, is the fact that some of us are thinkers. You know, it's like, I think this, or, you know, we take a lot of time to process things. So we don't always talk about it. Others like to talk about things, but are also listening. So they're the ones that are auditory. So they're hearing things that are going in. You have people that are visual, so like to see things. But also, you've got the feelers. So, people that say, I feel, or if you're like me, I very much like when I'm in clothes shops, I like to feel the clothes. And it used to annoy my mum such a lot because I'd have to touch things. And my kids are a little bit like that now and they do touch. But I know using the different languages and knowing what your children are or knowing what the parents are, you can relay that language the same. So, for example, my little boy's 7, he's a very visual. So if I said to him in the morning, right, you need to hurry up, to him, he's like, oh, what does that mean to me? And I've been known several times before learning this that he would just take his clothes off and get back into bed. And I'd be like, oh my God, we're really going to be late now. We're not going to get out of the door. But as soon as you say that to someone that's visual, they're like, well, I don't know what you mean or what I'm going to do. So with him, we put the uniform out in the morning and I'll go, your uniform's here. We then need to put our pants and our socks and our shoes, that all there. Then we go into the bathroom. And can you see your toothbrush? Your toothbrush is there. Can you clean your teeth? And he gets that. He's out on visual. And then when he's done that, I say, right, so if you want to put your coat on, or we're doing this, he then gets it by using that language. My daughter is very much a talker. So we have to talk it through. If we don't talk through what's happened, when she gets to the school gates, she'll be like, it's a rubbish morning because you've not even spoke to me. And so we will have to have conversations around what we're doing in the day, what we're doing, how it's going to be. And then she's like, I'm going into school. I'm quite happy with that. And I think with the way that we use our language, if we are mirroring and matching with people, so that works parents and children, but it also is teachers and children. If we ask them, can they see something or can I show you something? If it's a person that's visual, they're going to be like, great, that's exactly what I need. But if it's a person that's a thinker and they've asked them to see something, oh, I don't see it. I don't get it because I need to think about it and I need to process it. So, whereas if you're asking somebody, so it's a really good one for relationships as well. If you are both people that are thinkers, you have to ask the question saying, what do you think? Because if not, the thinkers keep themselves and are processing things. So they're not actually, they're almost assuming, oh, well, they're doing that because. You know, I thought I told them that, and now they're acting like this, but they haven't actually asked the person what they think or why they're doing that. So it can real clash. So another client that I had around emotion, she was struggling with a business and her relationship. And she said, my husband just doesn't speak to me. I just don't understand. Where am I going with this? What, why doesn't he speak? We've been together 20 years. I'll ask him what I think and I get nothing. I said, does he say I feel a lot? Does he show you his emotions? And he, you know, it's different. It's not about thought. She was like, oh yeah, that's interesting. Because if you ask a feeler what they think, what will happen is they then process what they think. And they'll be like, I don't think anything. I'm a feeler. So I want to ask someone how they feel. So if you ask, how do you think or how do you feel with the right people in the right context, you'll get the answers that you want.
Amanda, thank you so much for sharing all that information. My first question is how did you differentiate which learning style, which communication style your children had?
Well, in sessions, we have questionnaires, so you can then identify yours and then you're able to go back. But what it is around is the language that they use. So for Alfie, he'll be like, I see this, or can I show you this? Can I show you this? And they're very much focused on what's there. So he's very much a kid that loves all his Lego. He loves Minecraft, so he likes to show me how he's put. Well, to me, it goes over my head, that kind of technology, but he loves to explain all the stuff. And I have to go, oh, yeah, that's interesting. Just show me that again. And then we go through it. And he's also very much into figures and calculations. So he will like, and he likes pictures and things like that. So the main thing, though, you can deal from it is the language they use. And if they want to, if they say, oh, yeah, I see that, or you ask them, do they see? And they go, yes, yeah, I see that. Or they're wanting to show you things. So it's all around the visual. So if they're at school and they like big pictures on the wall or things like that, you can identify it in that way. If, like my daughter, she'll be like, can I talk to you about this? And then it is very much auditory. And so she loves reading and she's forever reading out loud from the books and things like that. So you can identify it by almost mirroring their language. And you can find that that really helps, but also being clean with your communication, you can find out from your child. Because I know now if I'm not clear with the kids, so like I say, if I say, oh, we're going to be late or hurry up, they don't know what hurry up is. That's like, well, in my radar that I'm not hearing that, I don't get what you mean. So then it normally means that we're late because we haven't changed that around. If they're a feeler, they're going to ask you about how they feel, or do you want to feel this, or I'm feeling really upset at the moment. And then if they're a thinker, they are very much going to be auditory, digital, and they're very quiet and they're taking things in and they'll say to you, I think this. So they're very forthright in knowing their knowledge and things like that. So you can identify very quickly with the language they use and mirror that because you'll get a better response from them that way. So it's working out, obviously listening to the language and seeing what they are. If they're like, for me, I always say I feel. But if you've got somebody that's auditory digital, so that works in relationships, and they're a thinker, you've got to adapt that in your conversations. And what's something that I found really interesting as well is, so for example, if I said to you, if we were going to work on a project together, would you like the big picture or would you like more detail? What kind of person are you? More big picture or more detail?
Are you asking me here?
Yep.
I say I'm definitely more big picture.
Okay. So again, I am. So for example, when we said about our meeting up on the podcast, well, you were kind of like, this is the date. Is that okay? And I'm brilliant with that because I'm like, right, the notes in my diary, that is absolutely great. But some people that I did my training course with, they were like, well, can you show me the room? Can I have, you know, the dates and everything? And what will we be doing on those dates? I want exactly that. Or can I have some questions? Or can I? So they really want to be in the detail. And that's a really important thing to identify with people. So kids as well, but also in your relationship. So for example, my husband is all in the detail. So we can be having the same conversation, but I think I'm done because I'm big picture. So I'm like off out the door. But he can be like, well, you've not given me what I need because I need more information on what you were talking about because now that's gone. And it can look, when you're like that, one big picture and one literal, is that you look quite rude. Because I'm like, I've only got 5 minutes, then I'm on the school run. So this is it. So I'm just telling you this and off I go. But now I know I need to go to him. Can we finish this conversation when I come back? Or can I give you that detail when I come back? Because again, you're then giving that person what they need. So you'll have some people that are really literal and want all the information, but others that will go, yeah, give me a date or whatever, and I'm fine, I can work with that. But it's identifying that. So even if you're having a conversation, it's like, do you need a bit more detail with that? Or are you okay? No, I'm okay with that. I just have the date. Because as well, that puts a connection with the person that you've got and they feel listened to and heard. And so you're going to get more from them.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's so interesting because I am 100%, I'm a big picture person and my husband is the detailed individual. And I always think like, I told you, like, this makes perfect sense to me. Why don't you understand? And then for him, it's like, it is about the details and what are we going to do? What are we going to discuss? Like, and I always find it really fascinating when we have financial talks or just talks about whatever's going on in our lives, or we need to make a decision or something. For him, it's like, okay, on Thursday, 7 o'clock, we are talking about finances. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, on Thursday, we're going to have a chat between us about the things that we're thinking about. And he's always like, no, we're not doing that. We're talking about finances. And then if I like, okay, well, this finance is related to making this decision, he's like, we're not talking about these decisions. And so it's interesting to hear you talk about it because I can see that in my real life. And I think other people can as well. And I think it's really an advice to advise people to ask, do you need more details? Because I am two things that I know for sure that you said. I'm big picture and I'm also auditory. And so for me, when I speak to people, I remember like the tone of their voice. I remember almost exact words that they say. Now, I might not even remember where we met at, but I can remember all of the details of the conversation. And I hear them played back in their voice in my head. And when I told my husband, he just thought that was absolutely astounding. He was like, what? You hear people's voices inside your head? I said, well, no, I just hear the same octaves of the person that I talk to. It's not like I hear voices. It's like I just hear the person re-saying what they said. And then I realized that not everybody in the world does that. And not everybody can retain information that they're auditorily heard. And I was like, oh, well, no wonder why I'm having so many communication issues with, you know, my loved ones or my husband. And when I was teaching, I am not a visual person. And so I had to like write it into my plans to make sure that I used visuals in my teaching. And even though I taught young kids, and that's something that people were like, oh, well, of course you would use visuals with young kids. But for me, because it didn't make sense to me, I had to like force myself to do such a thing.
And that's it. And then over time, you can find that you actually change. So especially in a people-based environment, because, for example, lockdown was a really big thing, whereas you were working very much on your own and you're isolated on that. So you could change to become more of a thinker because you're processing things internally. But when you work with people, you can almost adapt because you learn that you're mirroring people. So you could do one of the questionnaires that we do, you could do today. But actually, if you'd then been in your teaching environment role and do it next week, because you'd been focusing on the visual, your scores could have gone up on the visual side because your unconscious is going, yeah, we need to get that visual. That needs to be a picture. Or this needs to be. And it's so interesting then when you hear it, because that's what Emily's like. She remembers conversations. And when we talk to, and she'll go back for months and going, this is what was said, or in the tone of voice. And that for a child as well, if they are auditory, can bring on many anxieties and feel overwhelmed because you're remembering that tone of voice could keep being in your voice, in the voice or whoever you're hearing, and thinking, right, I need to do what I need to do. And especially for kids in school, it's really powerful, the language we use and the things that we do it within schools, because from 0 to 7 is the time where we are sponges. We are taking in absolutely everything. So the unconscious is always like, whatever I'm learning, I'm taking in, and that's being processed. As we get to 7 to 14, we then start to take on peers, what peers are saying, friends, and we're starting to feel ourselves with the clothes that we wear and things like that. And then from 14 to 25, that's almost where you are processing things and you're making your own decisions. But your brain is not fully functional till 25 to be able to sit back and take that in as what's reality and what's not. So for many children that have gone through traumas and things like that, I mean, it still makes me laugh to this day. I came out of school with my nephew years ago, and he must have been six. And he'd got his math paper, and it said 5 + 5 = 11. And there was a tick next to it. And I'm going, 5 + 5, that's not 11. He said, the teacher's ticked it, it's 11. I'm like, 5 + 5, count my hands. He said, it doesn't matter, it's 11. It's what the teacher said. And I was like, oh my God, now when I think back years later, but that is because at 0 to 7, we are taking that all in. We are sponging everything. So all our experiences go to the unconscious and then we add to it. So if there are things that, you know, that we've learned from our parents and things, one big thing reminds me, Christmas cards. I was talking to a client and said, I've got no time. I've got no time at all. And I've got all these Christmas cards. I said, oh, that's interesting. Where did you start writing Christmas cards? She said, oh, my mum always did it. So I've just carried it on. I said, do you like writing the Christmas cards? She was like, no, I hate it. I said, why are you doing it? She said, my mum always did it. So I kind of feel, now my mum, bless her, she still does all her Christmas cards, still writes them, gets my dad out delivering, but she will be there till the nth degree. When I learned this, I was like, do you know what? Am I doing that? Because I'm following, I'm not going to do that anymore. I just stopped now. And my mum will still be like, so and so, write your Christmas card. And then we'll be like, I like writing. I'll write a Christmas card for you. But I don't go back into that because some of the things that we have conflict with in our brains around our values and the things that we want and we believe. And if it goes against that, it's almost like the unconscious fights it and goes, oh, I hate this job. I've got to write all these Christmas cards. And it's like talking you out of it to go, why are you doing it? But we don't question those things until we almost sit down and reflect, hold on a minute, why am I doing that? Where has that come from? And it's, I lived in Australia for a year, many years ago, and I'd get on the train and I'd think, am I in America? And there'd be like all the teenagers talking in American accents, not even thinking about it, but obviously they were all watching American soaps, American things. And then they were picking up the accent because it's that thing of like you're watching and you're taking it in. So they're like, oh, this is pretty cool. And they don't realize, but they're then picking up the accent. And things like that. So over time, things change and we add to our experiences. But what will happen as the brain becomes more to the point where you're 25, it can adjust to the realities of things. But if we've fed the brain with lots of fears and anxieties throughout, that's what will stay with us, that will stop us getting the things that we want. And I find that is huge for a lot of clients that were going, no, I can't do that. And it turns out that something's happened years ago that's actually stopped us from doing those things. And I know for me personally, I've been through a divorce, a separation. And when I started initially, because very much I focused my business around health and wellness, it was all about, I work for, I've got a network marketing business. And they were like, you need to get on the stage, you need to be sharing your successes. And I was like, no, I'm not talking about anything. I've been divorced, you know, I've gone through IVF. Now I'm on my own with the kids. I'm not talking about any of that. But that's part of the defining parts of you that you go, actually, this is part of my life that I can now share and help people. And it wasn't till a business coach said to me, I don't understand why you're not getting anywhere with this. And in my head, I thought, well, I'm paying my bills. I'm getting to spend time with the kids. That's it. I can just hide away. I don't need to be on the stage or anything. And that's when NLP was introduced to me, because it clears the blocks. And it gets you to focus on the things that you want, because a lot of the language we use as well, we'll say, I don't want to do that, or I don't want to be late, or I don't want to be stuck in traffic again. And then guess what happens? The unconscious doesn't know the difference between reality and what's not reality. So if you're saying, I don't want to get stuck in traffic, all it hears is traffic. So the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to be stuck in traffic or you're going to be late. So by focusing on those things and the values and things that you want, it goes towards your goals, and the language changes can make such a difference that we don't realize. Because I think we go into roles and environments where they go, here's all the training, here's things like that. But if we tweak our language and focus on what we want, the result is we get what we want.
Absolutely. And I think that is also tied to the power of visualization as well, where the reason that visualization works is because you're putting these things into your mind, the positive things that you're wanting, you're very vivid about that image. What does it look like, smell like, all of those sensory types of things. And then those types of things start coming to you, or you visualize your day, even something that's more basic, not like I want $1 million and a 75,000 dollar house, and I mean, all these things. They it's not the big things, but even in day-to-day things, like if you're going to the beach, well, I'm going to visualize that the beach is going to be warm. It's going to have a, there's not going to be very many people. It's going to be a peaceful time. I'm going to find an easy parking spot. I'm going to walk, and there's not going to, it's not going to be a far distance, or all those things. And all of a sudden it's like, well, hey, I get there and all these things happen. And then just like you said, if you focus on all of the negative things, like, oh, it's going to be sandy, it's going to be sticky, I'm going to have to walk 4 miles to get to the beach, and then my child is going to be screaming all the way there. If you're like, once you get started, it's hard to kind of stop, right? It's hard to rein yourself in. And so, and then like you said, it becomes your reality. And I have noticed that in myself, in that I did it last year, and I restarted it at the beginning, well, actually at the end of last year, where every day I write three things I'm grateful for at the end of the day. And I did this for three, for a couple of reasons. One is just that, is I've noticed when you focus on the positive things in your life, whether it's grateful, thankful, good things, whatever, is actually, it changes your perception of your day. They've thought, oh, well, then your mind is looking for all the good things that are happening in your life and all the things that you should be grateful for, or all the things that went right. And they dim and lessen the things that went wrong that day. And I found that really fascinating when I first began to journal, was that it was like, wait, my days are different somehow. And that really got me started into like how the mind works and neuroscience and all of that kind of stuff, is like, well, actually, there's more to this than just simply, oh, I just decided to write and all of a sudden my days are just so much better. It's that's not the case. It's like you're reprogramming your mind and what's important and what your subconscious should be listening and looking for and paying attention to.
And I think that's a huge thing you said, like you wrote in your journal your three things that you're grateful for. And what'll happen is you'll see the difference, but it's that point of one day when you miss it and you go, oh, that didn't work then. I think because we get such into that routine and then something happens. And I think NLP has taught me that we got to have flexibility. So we've got choices. So for example, say one day you didn't do it, you're like, that's okay. I'll pick that up the next day, or I'll pick that up the other day. Or you might wake up in the morning and you go, oh, I just feel like I need that extra 10 minutes in bed. Have that 10 minutes extra in bed, because that will still give you what you need to process for that day. And it could be like, and you go, actually, today, instead of that journaling, I need 10 minutes outside. I need to go for a run. Or actually, mentally, I just need to sit here with my thoughts for 10 minutes. And it's kind of giving you those choices, but always going back to those things that work, but not being hard on yourself when that day comes and you go, it was less easy for that to for me to do that today. So I'm okay with that because I processed it. Because what happens is when we get into a routine, we sometimes go, no, you didn't do it today. And it's like that, oh, it doesn't work then, does it? But it's like when we do the timeline thing, I have a habit, I'm not very good with time. So I can actually, we do timeline resourcing, but I've moved my timeline because I was the complete night owl and it was a complete nightmare. So I was like, right, okay, let's try this. And then Emily was like to me, oh my God, you're conscious all the time of the time. I'm not always late, but I am more conscious of time now compared to what I was. And it's just that tweak in your mind of actually, I need to change this. Or this is the focus that's going to get me the goal that I want. And if you want that change will happen. But if you don't, and you're like, really, actually, that's not for me at the moment, then that's fine. But put that to the side and go, I have to accept and take responsibility that I've chosen to take this route, or I've chosen not to find a solution for that because I'm happy with this fear or whatever that may be at the minute. I'm okay with that. Because sometimes there can be a double bind with some people think, actually, if I hold on to this, this is keeping me safe. If I hold on to that fear or hold on to that, that's going to keep me safe. But what was really interesting as well, I always say to everybody, although I am a coach, I also need a coach. I also need to work on myself. So my days aren't all perfect. Things happen and I have to go to myself, hold on a minute, you just need to check that. And so I do a lot of these things. I found that by learning these techniques and strategies, I can then pass them on to my children. Now, my little girl was born 4 weeks prematurely, and so she's quite tiny for a nine-year-old. And she'd been trying out for the gymnastics at school, and she didn't get in on it. But when she came away from it, somebody said to me, she handled that well, didn't she? Because obviously most kids would be quite upset and emotional because I didn't get in and I've worked really hard on this. But when we had a conversation about it, although she loves gymnastics, the way that they taught it in school, you've got a quick session to learn something, and she needed time to process it. So we're like, okay, perhaps this has happened for a reason. She then went for the swimming gala, and she loves swimming. And again, although she got in to do the training, they didn't put her through, but she got most improved swimmer. So she came out, she's like, I'm really happy with this. We then had an email to say that they were trialing for the swimming club for 7, 8, and 9 year olds. She said, I'm going to do that. I was like, great, let's go and do it. Because that thing of focusing on what you want, she went for 2 sessions. She had to dive. She'd never dived before. And she was the tiniest of 8 kids. And there was 4 of them that got in. She was one of those 4. And that, this is where the emotion comes in, because you think, I am making a difference to my child by teaching her these techniques. And out of all of it, if that's one thing I can do, that means more than anything.
I can feel the goosebumps raising on my arms, because I think when we think about the impact as mothers that we're putting on our children and our daughters specifically, it's you're creating generational change.
Yeah.
And that is major. And she'll be able to pass that on to her children or the people that she interacts with later in her life. And that is so, so important. And I commend you for doing that.
Thank you.
Really. One thing I wanted to go back and talk about, and I just want your feedback, because I always wondered, could it have been my brain, like the power of my brain, that helped me handle the situation at a different level? Now, going back to Tony Robbins, because I am a huge fan, I was reading one of his books, and it was the beginning of last year. So it would have been the beginning of 2023, January. And I was about halfway through, and I was with my mom and my husband and my daughter. We went to Disneyland in the US. And during that time, I got sick. And then eventually my mom would get sick and we would test. And even though I wasn't really having bad symptoms at that point, I actually went to the pool just before I was tested positive for COVID. And so I'm reading this book. So you can imagine, you have this book by Tony Robbins. It's his original book. He's talking a lot about NLP, the power of your brain, the power of your mindset, all of this stuff. And so I just sort of decided, kind of silently, that my body was capable of handling this virus, that it wasn't going to defer me. It wasn't going to put me in the hospital or make me really sick. It was just like, I have all the parts that are necessary already inside my body to handle this. And that, you know, that I understand it's a big situation I'm in. I have a big like illness, having COVID at that time, but I'm just going to, my body knows what it's going to do and it's going to handle it. And I like literally told myself this over and over and over again for like 2 or 3 days. And when I look back at my experience, my experience was incredibly mild. And like I was sick for maybe a day and a half to 2 days, and just some coughing at night, and never had a fever. There was no severe situation. It didn't really, except for one day when I went back to my hotel on the first day, it didn't really impact my experience. And when I tell other people about my experience with COVID, it seems like it's not very often that people have really minor experiences with it. They were like, oh, I was sick in bed for like 4 days or for 2 weeks. It was awful. And I was so tired and like the sickest I've ever been in my life. It was just like, for me, it felt like something like a cold. Not to, I, and I want to disclaimer this is I'm absolutely not saying that it's not a severe illness or a situation that happened. There's people in my family that had to be hospitalized. They have long-term effects from it. Very close, dear friends and people that I know that passed from it. So absolutely, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just speaking to my own personal experience. But I'd love to know, do you think that what I was reading and telling my mind had anything to do with the impact that the illness had on me?
Absolutely. So I don't know whether you've heard of The Body Holds the Score.
Yes, I love that book.
So the body always at some point is telling you things to process, so to help you and things like that. And if we hold on to things, that's what happens. So for example, when I split from my partner, so the children's father, it was about 18 months later, all my hair started to fall out, but they couldn't find any. I went to the doctors and things like that. And I thought, it was when I was doing through the NLP, she said, you haven't dealt with these things. And even to the extent we do something called a wheel of life, and it splits down into your finances, your money, children, family, all that kind of thing. And you score yourself. But when it came to relationships, I crossed it out. So that doesn't apply to me. She said, oh, okay, then she left it. And then I met my partner, who's now my husband, a couple of years ago, and things were repeating themselves. So things were coming up for me that I was like, oh, I haven't dealt with this. But instead of actually thinking to myself, I need to deal with it, I didn't. I rang the woman and said, this NLP stuff doesn't work. I can't believe we're having these conversations. I said, it doesn't work. She said, you didn't deal with anything from the relationship part, did you? And I said, oh, that's really interesting. She said, you need to go back and deal with that. Well, as you can see now, I still have my hair. So obviously it didn't cause. But what happens is we hold on to things. So like your experiences, I cleared a lot of things up, which means that you do focus more on what you want. So my COVID experience was very much like yours. I didn't even realize I'd got it. And we were at my mum and dad's, and my sister-in-law sent my mum a message to say, oh, I've got COVID. So my mum said, can you show me? I just need to do these tests. So there's mum and dad. My mum and dad are in their late 70s, and there's me at the table. Me thinking, oh, I'll show them how to do it, so I might as well do one myself. So we're doing it, and mine came up. I was like, oh my God, I've got it. So literally, I'm like this, getting out of the house, and I'm like shouting through the door, clean the sides down, clean all the doors so that I haven't got near you. Because again, what we were told, and you pick up everything, that frightened you also to the extent of how quickly I could spread it to anybody else. So then I was like, I don't know how I'm getting my kids from school, because this was the point where you had to go for the extra tests and all the rest of it. So I was like, right, my dad's still going to have to go and get the kids because they won't let me on the school now I've tested. They were both then came out and they were both tested, and the three of us had got it, but it was 2 weeks before Christmas. My kids thought they were having a party. So there was not a symptom between us. Now, as you said in the disclaimer, my mum and dad got it the year after and were quite poorly with it. So I still, but I think in my head, I'd gone through the fear and the things like that. And well, my kid, my Elf on the Shelves were the best that year ever, because I had 2 years where we couldn't go anywhere. But like I say, between us, we didn't have a symptom. It was purely from the test. But I wouldn't have tested. But also, I am very conscious of what I'm putting in here. So a lot of the news and the things I don't read, and I don't put the news on. My dad fills me in if I need to know anything, because he's like, don't you even watch any of it? I said, well, no, because if there is something that's important, you will share that with me. But I think it is what we feed ourselves can so quickly turn into something else. So your brain is such a powerful thing on what we deal with and what we manage, because at that point when you said to yourself, you know what, this isn't ruining this is what I'm going to focus on. I'm going to focus on, it's going to be fine. I'm going to have a nice time. And it's that thing of sometimes when we're ill and people say, how are you? And they go, oh, I'm really fit. Oh, I've got a really bad throat, or I've got things. Rather than going, actually, I'm on the mend, because it turns that round and you go, actually, I can focus on this. My husband now, like I was saying earlier, he's got Crohn's. And there's a book also called, Metaphysical Anatomy, which is very good, and shares about how things are related in your body to what you've got. And we sat and we read about Crohn's, and it was around trauma and things that had happened in the past that can show up in your body. But if you start to clear some of that, it can make such a difference. And we've cleared so much. And when he went to see his consultant, they said to him, I've never seen your Crohn's be as good as this is. So to the extent he's not on medication, he takes, takes aloe. And he was one of the first ones because he was in his 50s. So it was almost experimental things that they've tried years ago. But his focus is very different, and he will share it now with other men and say, do you know what, actually, because a lot of men will go, that stuff, what, that's talking therapy, that's not going to help me. And what's really interesting, that actually by clearing these things up and focusing on what we want, it can, our mind is so powerful that it goes, okay, then I'm going with that. So if we say we feel poorly or we say we feel well, that's what the brain's going to go, actually, this is what I need to focus on.
So much so. I've seen that so much in my life in so many different ways, with the COVID experience, with when I was on a mission to make so much money in the span of 2 weeks. I posted it everywhere in my house. Like, if I was in any room, anywhere, anytime I went downstairs, anything, it was all over my house, my focus. And then all of a sudden it was just like, okay, there it is right in front of me. Because I was thinking of nothing else. And so obviously I had to take aligned action with that focus, but it was like, it was always right in front of my eyes because I couldn't move anywhere in my house without seeing it.
Yeah.
And that's just really, really fascinating to me. And I have, like, my wheels are turning about how many things could be changing and how many lives could be impacted by your work. And NLP in general, it's just like, wow, there's so many things that could be opened up. And when you talked about Crohn's disease, and I read another book, I think I actually have it right near me, it's What's Missing from Medicine, by Sarah Sanik. But she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and now she lives a life medication free. And she did a lot of diet changes for hers and focus changes. But again, it just highlights the focus. Like, if your mind is focused on getting better, if your mind is focused on the good things that are going to come or how your life is going to change, well, then, as you said a little bit earlier, that it doesn't really matter if it's real or not. It's just like, that's the image that you put into your head, and then it believes it. Okay, so now we need to take a action that aligns with that vision.
I mean, that is huge. I mean, when we talked earlier, we talked about my business beforehand in network marketing was around health and wellness. And I used to tell people I hadn't got anything wrong with me. But I got diagnosed in my late 30s with adenomyosis. So I'd suffered with hormones for a long time. And when I went to the doctors when I was 14, the answer was, we'll put her on the pill. We will. This is how this will work. So back then I was like, well, that's the answer. I mean, to the extremes, I would buy Diacom when I went on holidays because I didn't want to go to the toilet on a plane. So I was like, well, that's the answer. I mean, that's shocking when you think about it now. And I used to live on Cocodamol and Nurofen, probably for at least 10 days every month. And it wasn't until I went into my health and wellness business that I was like, actually, there are alternatives to this and things that can help, because we take on what we're told by the experts and we go, actually. And sometimes we don't look for the choices. It's like, what options have I got? Well, they've told me that, so I'll just do that. And I think it's took me a long time to go, actually, my health is a lot better because I'm not doing that and I'm focusing on being well, but also giving yourself choices that some days your body might ache or your body, and go, actually, I'm not going to take 3 months off or whatever. I'm just going to take today and give myself that piece. So it might be like, you don't do that workout that day because you just need to give yourself a breather. And you might sit and journal or do something different. But it's that thing of, how am I working forward towards my goal by doing the things that I want to do that are going to achieve that, rather than the things that you don't want to do.
So important. And important for people to hear. And also to highlight that one day doesn't mean that you've ruined your whole routine and it can never be savaged again. And that it makes you a failure because you missed one day out of 300. No, that's not the case. And you can bounce back from it. And it's important to learn that type of resilience, to like bounce back from a situation. So I'd like to ask you one more question, Amanda. And from all of your experiences, what advice would you give to someone who is trying to find their path in life, or if they want to go into entrepreneurship, or if they want to take a path less traveled, what advice would you give them?
Do it. I would definitely say do it, but I would say look into it, what you want to do, because I think we follow the path of, sometimes we say least resistance, sometimes it's the path that we followed because everybody else has followed that and we've not had the opportunity to look for something. A huge example of this is my business started because of my fertility challenges. I was told years ago that I just had unexplained infertility. Well, when things are classed as unexplained, there's got to be something to explain it. There's got to be something there. And a lot of that is down to what's going on in here. So if we can process what's going on and clear what that is, we can achieve anything. I think we almost get stuck because we followed the crowd and we hide with our fears and things like that and go, do you know what? This is not an option for me. Well, I like to think everything's an option, that we have choices. If we go by one thing, we become almost robots. But if we find alternatives, we've got choices. I didn't realize until about 5 years ago that I had choices. And it won't please everybody because you go off the norm. But the thing is, are you happy with where you're going and what you're doing? Because if you're not, your unconscious will always fight you and you won't achieve the things that you want, because it'll be saying, no, this isn't the route we were going on. This isn't route we should be going on. One thing I did learn after lockdown is I taught myself to tow a caravan. And I can tell you, I can probably count on my hands how many women tow caravans. And it was one thing my sister turned around and said, I can't believe you're doing that. But it gives me choice and freedom in my holidays to take my kids who are young away. And we get to be in a field in the middle of nowhere. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but it's a choice that I made. And I followed through with that, like you said, with the actions to achieve that. So whatever you want, if in your mind you can see it and you can feel it and you can process your thoughts and not take everybody else's on, you will achieve that. And that's sometimes the thing of going, actually, I'm not hearing anything else. I'm hearing my voice and I'm focusing on how I feel and see things to achieve the goals that I want.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's brilliant advice. I love that. Love it. Love it. So I think I will end the episode there because people need to take that on and think about it and see how that's going to apply to their life. And for all of you listeners out there, I thank you so much for tuning in to Step Into Your Sunshine. Remember that new episodes drop every Monday and Thursday at 8 p.m. And Amanda, thank you so much for coming on today. I have learned so much. I have validated a lot of my thoughts and feelings that I've been feeling over the years, and I really appreciate you. And I would love for you to again share your business, where to find you on, and where to find you online.
Thank you so much. It's been absolutely lovely coming on. Thank you for inviting me. So I'm Amanda Box, Outside the Box Coaching and Training. You can find me on Facebook, or you can email me at the moment while we're waiting for my website to come up. It's info@outsidetheboxcoaching.co.uk. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, listeners. I can't wait to chat with you again soon.